This is the UK Financial Intelligence Unit podcast.
Hello and welcome to another UK Financial Intelligence Unit podcast. My name is David Maguire and I'm a senior officer in the UK FIU. In this edition, we're looking at how the UK FIU works with overseas partners, ensuring that intelligence on money laundering and financial crime is effectively shared with international partners. Now, British law enforcement agencies, including operational teams and the National Crime Agency, frequently seek intelligence about finances and assets held outside the UK by people and companies under investigation. And the UK FIU acts as the point of contact for these requests. We also receive a high volume of similar inquiries from overseas jurisdictions wanting to identify or trace assets held in the UK. So, in this podcast, we'll be hearing from John O'Sullivan, who's a manager in the UK FIU international team, and also from Mike Manley, who's an international liaison officer based in Washington. As with all our podcasts, no active or sensitive operational work is discussed, and panellists' opinions are independently theirs. Okay, so let's start by looking to try and demystify some of the international statistics which regularly feature in the SARS annual report. We often report on the number of financial intelligence requests received by the UK FIU and the number of financial intelligence requests made by the UK FIU. But what do these mean exactly? John, if I can put that to you first, please.
Yeah, well, one of our core functions in the international team is basically the service of requests on behalf of law enforcement agencies. So that's not just the domestic law enforcement agencies and partners in the UK, but also all of our sort of foreign partners and counterparts overseas. So a lot of these are in service, obviously, of our core function, which is to combat money laundering, terrorist financing. So a lot of them are either relate to active criminal investigations or maybe investigations that are in the early days. So it features more like an intelligence development type package. The way we do this is we have a standard template in the UK that we provide to partners and law enforcement agencies. That template, as well as giving us the details for the request itself, such as the subject and entities and summary information along with the questions, also enables us to obtain a lot of information that we need for risk assessment purposes. So elements of human rights, for instance, data protection, principles of sharing in country, and any associated risks like that. The agencies will then forward the request into ourselves here in the UK FIU International, and we will kind of process and quality assure that for our purposes, and then we will funnel that through the appropriate channel to external agencies. So, for instance, the UK FIU is an FIU first and foremost, but we also wear a few other hats here in the the international team. So we're also the Asset Recovery Office for England and Wales, with Scotland having its own office in place. And we're also the Camden Asset Recovery Interagency Network, or more commonly known as CARIN, contact point for the UK as well, which is another asset tracing network. So each network has its sort of different strengths and weaknesses. Certainly Egmont, for instance, is more along the criminal intelligence finance based. Whereas, like I say, CARIN and the Asset Recovery Office are largely asset tracing based. We'll then, depending on what the questions are asked, draft those onto the appropriate templates. And those templates will go through a quality assurance process here in the UK FIU from the senior managers. And once that's all agreed and the format is basically standardized for our purposes, we'll then send those out to our partners overseas in other FIUs and asset tracing offices. And they will obviously, from their point of view, then look at the request, assess it according to their own legislation in country, and then conduct whatever checks rather that they feel are necessary at their end. Any response then will get sent back to ourselves to manage. We'll handle that from a UK FIU standpoint and then return that to the originator so they can then use that as part of their investigation.
John, another term that features frequently in our international statistics refers to spontaneous disseminations. Again, can you explain to our listeners what these are exactly?
Yes, so spontaneous disseminations are basically kind of the opposite of requests, if you will. So we see requests as a kind of law enforcement seeking information from foreign parties when they know, obviously, that there is an interest there. What we like to call spontaneous disseminations is where we in the UK FIU proactively seek information that we hold in our SARS database that might have an element of foreign interest or impact. So that might be things such as the subject lives in that jurisdiction, or maybe the criminality crosses over that jurisdiction, or from looking at previous requests and information that we've been sent by that jurisdiction, we're able to deconflict the interest and identify it that way. So again, we have the SARS data that was provided to us by reporters. Obviously, that information for our purposes is highly confidential and subject to public interest immunity. So it's not something that we'd want to share in that format. And always foremost in our mind is to protect the source and the reporter of any intelligence. So where we do find information that we do think will be of interest to foreign jurisdictions, we'd go through quite a stringent process of sanitization to provide lines of inquiry only, with a view that the jurisdictions can then come back to UK reporters and law enforcement if they need further information, such as for evidential purposes in an ongoing investigation. We also have cross-border dissemination responsibilities. So there's anti-money laundering directives as part of the EU initiative that require us to proactively provide information to EU member states. That is something that we've continued to do following Brexit, largely because of the immense value that we have and our colleagues within Europe have on spontaneous disseminations, and obviously the generation of intelligence sharing in that area. On top of that, we also get a lot of referrals from other teams, particularly within the FIU. We have our colleagues in the Defence Against Money Laundering team, the SARS Exploitation Action team, and the Terrorist Financing team that during the course of their work identify a lot of information that could be of interest and relevance to foreign jurisdictions for their investigations. But likewise, as being cited within the National Crime Agency, we also have a lot of other agencies, a lot of teams within the NCA, I should say, that have interests and work that crosses over with SARS information in particular as an intelligence source. So that might be corruption, cyber, child sex exploitation, for instance, and obviously wider partners as well that we can all support through the use and sort of proactive management of SARS information.
I'm glad you mentioned Brexit, because following the UK decision to leave the EU and the subsequent deal negotiations, a significant amount of work did take place in the UK FIU during 2020 to prepare for both a negotiated and a non-negotiated outcome. What kind of contingency plans were put in place to ensure that we have continued communications with EU member states?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Brexit obviously meant a lot of changes to the UK in a number of areas, but I think certainly from the UK FIU and our colleagues overseas, the main driver was to maintain business as usual as much as possible. We're lucky to have some really good relationships with our colleagues within Europe, particularly on the FIU and the asset tracing front. So there was a very strong determination, I think, from everybody to maintain our current status quo, if you will, as far as practical. And at the end of the day, we all have a common goal to protect the public and combat illicit finance and crime internationally. I think where Brexit has had an impact on our functions and where we had to introduce the additional contingency planning was on the middle stage of the process, which is largely around the safe and secure exchange of information. Previous to Brexit, we had two key systems in Europe that we used to exchange information, one for more geared towards financial intelligence and the other for asset tracing. The asset tracing system, we've fortunately been able to maintain access to, which is fantastic news for us and our partners across the EU, because it means, you know, we can continue chasing the assets and really hurt the criminals in their pocket. Where it comes to looking at funds and where those funds have gone and possibilities for realising that in any confiscation proceedings. The area that we have had to change slightly is probably around the intelligence sharing for financial crimes. We had a system that we used to use called FIUNet, which would allow us to provide the information in a certain manner, which worked quite well for us. In its absence, though, we did have a parallel system called Egmont, which also, fortunately, is used by the EU member states as well. So for us, there was an element of moving our functions from one system to another system. Both systems have their pros and cons, but both incredibly effective when it comes to sharing intelligence and information with our international partners.
John, your team does a lot of financial intelligence sharing with global partners. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
There are wider projects that are run between countries. The UK FIU, for instance, within the last few years, has been involved in a child sex exploitation project with one or two of our international partners, looking at nexus points between our countries, how that looks like, how it manifests itself, you know, how we can better protect the public and vulnerable individuals out in those jurisdictions. And likewise, a lot of our partners internationally have other projects with other FIUs around money laundering, fraud, corruption, sanctions, pretty much across the board when it comes to the very high threat areas that we find ourselves dealing with. And then, of course, there is the evolution and discussion of international legislation, you know, opportunities for emerging markets, cryptocurrency initiatives, and how that is panning out in the real world, and potentially sort of horizon scanning for future opportunities and ways that that might manifest itself in a criminal environment.
If I can turn to you now, Mike. Now, you work for the NCA as an International Liaison Officer, or ILO for short, and you're currently based in Washington, D.C., covering the USA and, to a lesser extent, Canada. Now, ILO isn't an acronym that many of our listeners will have heard before. So can you explain what this is?
Yeah, certainly. So the ILO network is a really important component of NCA's mission. The agency's remit is to tackle serious and organised crime, which by its very nature is international a lot of the time. And the threats that we're seeking to stop, such as money laundering, movement of firearms, cyber attacks, just to name but a few, these criminals clearly don't respect international boundaries, and therefore working key partners around the world, whether that's law enforcement, whether that's regulatory partners, whether that's wider government, that's absolutely essential if we're to have any chance of success in combating those threats and keeping the public safe, both in the UK and overseas. So the ILO network itself, that consists of about 150 people in 49 countries worldwide. We actually have a broader coverage of about 130 countries. So some of the posts in Africa and Asia, for example, will cover multiple countries. And those countries where we're located are countries that we've specifically chosen. They're key strategic locations where both the UK and that host partner country has a shared desire to combat serious and organised crime, which operates in our respective jurisdictions. And without that assistance from these partners, the UK would be a much less safe place. So the UK FIU is one of the most important teams that I work with on a regular basis, particularly their international team. So their remit within that team is to work with partners globally to share intelligence through the Egmont network and build relationships in conjunction with the different ILOs around the world. So I'm sure most of your listeners, they would know this, but for those who don't, Egmont is essentially a body of 167 financial intelligence units. It provides a platform for that secure exchange of expertise and financial intelligence to combat money laundering and terrorist financing. So essentially, it's this backbone of the intelligence exchange between the FIUs around the world. Just want to touch on the US FIU, which is called FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. So that acts as the US FIU and regulator. It's a critical and fantastic partner to the UK and the NCA. The UK FIU and FinCEN would exchange financial information in support of law enforcement investigations in both countries in both directions. So in the UK, that could be on behalf of the NCA, police, or other accredited organisations. And that's done strictly on an intelligence-only basis, so never to be used in a court of law. And the processes and the protocols surrounding Egmont and sharing that information are really well established. So with respect to how I tie in with UK FIU, FinCEN and Egmont, I work extremely closely with those teams and the wider US law enforcement system here, particularly around exploiting financial intelligence, which is derived from suspicious activity reports, So as you and many of your listeners will know, the SARs are filed by financial institutions known as the reporter in the UK. And that SARs intelligence can also be vital to investigations on this side of the Atlantic. Again, with Egmont being that secure gateway that we'd use to share that information. And that information would be risk assessed. It would only be shared if it's necessary, justified, proportionate, and in line with our statutory remit. We found that that SARs information is particularly valuable when we've got suspected proceeds of crime, which could be relevant to a US investigation. So in those scenarios, we've got to work quickly with the US teams here to quickly ascertain if they've got any interest in the assets. And if so, whether they seek that continued restraint, recovery, and ultimately the repatriation of those funds. So just to add a real world dimension to the money we're talking about here, this could be generated by fraudsters. It could be the proceeds of crime from people who are involved in human trafficking. It could be any predicate offence you can think of, really. And these people are trying to move it through the financial system, and we have an opportunity to prevent them from getting these ill-gotten gains back in their own hands. So I work with the UKFIU, the financial investigations teams in the NCA, and our US partners to work up those cases. That's probably a podcast in itself. But we're currently working on several cases at the minute where we're seeking to prove or disprove that the money that's referred to in these suspicious activity reports is derived from criminal conduct. Obviously, we can't discuss those specifics, but the takeaway for your listeners, I would suggest, would be that that SARs information initiated this work. And if those funds are proven to be criminal in nature and can be recovered by US authorities, then that would be a huge victory for UK, US law enforcement and ultimately keep both countries safer.
Can you tell us a bit more about the close working between the UK and US that you are involved in?
So away from Egmont, I also work really closely with the UKFIU on generating additional opportunities between the UK and US to improve our wider operational and strategic impact. So that might be looking at sharing strategic threat reporting. It could be identifying leading on joint training opportunities. For example, we've done a bit recently relating to cryptocurrency, and generally tapping into the wealth of expertise which the US currently offers us. And I'll finally just add that the UK and US house two of the world's biggest financial centres in London and New York. So it's no surprise that there's a tremendous amount of joint opportunities and collaboration that we can do around that.
Why are SARs so important in your international work?
A timely and well-written SAR is hugely valuable. And I think what might not appear valuable immediately when it's filed can prove to be of significant value later on for investigators. So on countless investigations I've worked on, we've run traces to identify what we know about an individual, an entity, and SARs consistently help us to progress those investigations, particularly around illicit finance, but also the wider threats. So I think that manifests itself in two ways, really. First of all, with respect to development of existing operations and investigations, SARs can generate previously unidentified financial details, communications information, other potentially lit criminal associates, which otherwise we just would never have known about. And those little pieces of information can help us open up new lines of inquiry. They can prove or disprove an individual's involvement in criminality, which is crucial. They can help us prioritise subjects of interest. And as I've seen in the US here, they can provide leads for international counterparts to really energise their investigations. The second aspect to it is what we call lead generation, where SARs can at times instigate brand new pieces of work, not just impacting on existing developments. So again, that ties in with what we talked about, the identification, the restraint and the recovery of suspected proceeds of crime. So SARs are hugely valuable to the work on both sides of the pond.
So why is sharing intelligence internationally so important?
That's a good question. And I would go so far to say it's absolutely critical. And that's why I extend my gratitude to the reporters who are submitting SARs to the UKFIU, because there is a customer for it and it is really, really valuable. So if you look at the transnational nature of crime, many criminals are using international boundaries to their advantage. So, for example, in bribery and corruption investigations, we see the use of multiple jurisdictions to hide, to move, to store that value across financial systems, between corporate entities, over borders, to deliberately obfuscate the work by global law enforcement to trace and recover the assets. We're up against some, I hate to say it, some very clever people, and that's why working with international partners is absolutely critical. So as law enforcement, we rely on information from other jurisdictions to successfully investigate and prosecute. Financial systems are interconnected. New technologies are allowing that rapid cross-border transfer of value. The evidence is often located overseas. So we have to be just as agile as criminals, if not more so, if we want to keep pace with some of the threats we face today. And those international partnerships and collaboration underpins everything that we do. I think also international sharing is really important given recent world events. When we look at the pandemic, that's generated new opportunities that criminals can exploit, new types of criminality. Take the COVID-related fraud, for example, whether that's PPE, personal protective equipment, whether it's vaccines, technology and supply, whether it's COVID relief loans. I think we've seen that although freedom of movement can be curtailed to an extent because of the pandemic, it doesn't mean that commodities don't move. It doesn't mean that value doesn't move. So we've seen new modus operandi, we've seen new criminal enterprises, and much of that has been international in nature. When you think about supply chains, think about global supply and demand, global trade. And that's why we continue to rely on working with our partners, even during these strange times.
Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast. You can find more information about the kind of international work that the UKFIU does in previous copies of the UKFIU magazine, SARS in Action. These are available on the NCA website, and these go into some of the topics discussed today in more detail. Our fourth podcast also focused specifically on an international project led by the UKFIU alongside the financial intelligence units of Australia and the Philippines. And this project looked at online child sexual abuse and exploitation and on the financial flows associated with it. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn to be kept up to date on UKFIU work and products. And please subscribe to this podcast on whichever platform you're listening from. So, until next time, I've been David Maguire, and this has been a UKFIU podcast.
This is the UK Financial Intelligence Unit podcast.